A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Good afternoon to you. This is The Call. I'm Nadine Blaney. And over the next hour, we'll be talking in depth about 10 stocks picked by you, plus a stock of the day with my expert guests, both of whom are in studio with me for the full hour. It's Rudy Filipek Van Dyke from FN Arena. Hello. And Sean Hickman from Market Matters. Nice to see you.
Nice to be here.
You both. Anything sort of top of mind for you right now as an investor, Rudy?
May is better than April.
Yeah. So far. What are we, 7 days in?
Yeah, and 7 days already better than the 30 days of April.
Yeah.
You can play with the numbers, but sell and May go away over the last decade has failed.
I've seen lots of that.
Yeah, yes. You know, we're bullish the market. I think it's going up. If it keeps stretching up towards 8,200, whatever, come August, September, you might be a bit careful. But, you know, the index isn't important. It's all about the stocks and the sectors.
The other thing also is important is that while we may not get the interest rate cuts in the time that we were hoping for, we will still get them. And that is important for the market.
Yeah, okay. And so any view on what could, should, will happen today come 2:30?
Oh, they're just going to be a little bit more hawkish on the inflation side and do nothing.
Yep, I agree. I think they've been very cautious, not getting ahead of trying to cut talk. They haven't been too dovish in the past. I don't think they will be today. They'll sit pat, they'll be patient. Data dependent, we've heard that a few times, and do nothing.
So it's safe to say you guys aren't making any big moves in your portfolios based on the higher for longer scenario?
No, I think that it's time to start looking at some of those consumer discretionary stocks that have been knocked around, but the quality end of town, maybe not yet. The US obviously is closer to rate cuts than we are.
It's also, I invest in really sturdy, solid, quality companies. They make profits, irrespective of what the RBA is doing today. So I'm not changing.
All right, let's, this man is not returning. I think that was a Christine Lagarde quote. Finance nerds, we're tons of fun. All right, let's get across what we will be discussing in the next half hour or so, and that is Data 3, G8 Education, which I think has an update out today, actually. Ingham's, Life360, which reports later this week, and Telix Pharmaceuticals. But we do, as you know, if you're a regular viewer, always start out with the stock of the day. And today it's AGL Energy, after it hiked its fiscal 2024 earnings outlook on strong summer demand, citing improved plant availability and higher consumer demand in both New South Wales and Queensland. AGL now expects underlying net profit after tax of between $760 and $810 million. So that's up from its previous guidance. Its underlying net profit in fiscal 2023 was $281 million. It's also improved its outlook for underlying operating earnings to between $2.1 billion and $2.2 billion, the midpoint of which is around 3% higher than its prior view. So again, let's just quickly check in on the stock price. Just past noon here in Sydney, and yeah, doing really well off the back of that upgrade, up by 6%, $9.91. So with my guest hosts, Sean Hickman and Rudy Filipek Van Dyke, let's get into it, shall we? I'll start with you, Sean, on AGL.
Okay, I didn't know what stock we had today, so.
Oh, well, surprise.
Surprise.
You missed the email.
Well, the details doesn't matter. What matters is we like AGL. We were bullish into the numbers today. We still like AGL. I think it looks good. I'd call it a buy.
That's a buy. And you know, you see further upside, obviously, in that share price. Are you sort of a short-term holder? Are you long-term holder of AGL?
No, I'd be a medium to longer-term holder. Like it as an income play, but I also think it's got some capital gain there. It's obviously had a nice little bit of capital gain today, but we are in a market where stocks that get upgrades are tending to keep strong and keep upgrading. Stocks that are missing, downgrading, are carrying on to miss. This is in the right place. It's doing the right things. We like AGL.
We like upgrades, don't we? All
we
right.
Love upgrades.
Rudy, do you like what I like? Doesn't really matter, AGL.
We do like upgrades. I mean, I sometimes, on occasion, I read a lot, and I sometimes see people in finance making absolutely ridiculous forecasts and analysis, as if earnings profits wouldn't count for equity markets. And I see a few here and there. And today, of course, is one of those examples where earnings forecasts do matter, right? And we like upgrades, and that's why the share price is up today. I wouldn't necessarily conflict with Sean's analysis, but I have a different take on
here. Okay, that's unsurprising. What's your different take?
Oh, really? On Monday, and I wrote about it for FN Arena subscribers, on Monday, Morgan Stanley issued an extremely interesting report trying to assess what the surging demand in data centers is going to do to Australia. And long story short, amongst the main beneficiaries cited were Origin Energy and AGL Energy. And the reason for that is that we are increasingly building more and more data centers, and the growth for the next 7 or 8 years is 150% of the current capacity we have. And these monsters, because basically that's what they are, they absolutely require so much power that you almost get so much tension on the network of whether we can cope with that. Now, Morgan Stanley thinks that the country can cope until 2030, which basically means we shouldn't worry too much about energy demand in this country. It's coming. It's coming on the back of massive investments of multi-billion dollars. And of course, we have Goodman Group and NextDC as the logical beneficiaries of that. But we also have AGL Energy and Origin Energy. So I think, I agree with Sean, if you can take a long-term view and forget about what happens next week, next month, or whatever, but this could well be a multi-year story where those guys, at the very least, have protection to the downside in demand form. They can only fuck it up themselves if they don't execute, but they should basically do well out of that.
I wouldn't use that exact term.
Did I use that word, by the way?
No. I wouldn't use that term.
I was like, I'm just going to let that.
Yeah. I wasn't going to talk over that. I mean, I wrote about this morning about Goodman Group and NextDC. We've been very bullish data centers. Yeah. Goodman Group has killed it for us. We could have had both. We
still
went with Goodman
killing
Group.
It for me.
Yeah, it's looking fantastic. We see no reason to sell it. I think it would be $40 before you know it. Might take a little bit off the table because suddenly it would become a huge part of our portfolio at $40. I looked at NextDC. They both look like they got 15% upside before you know it. They both look great. There's no point holding both. We're a real money mark portfolio like Rudy. And this might be a secondary play down the track.
It's a mega trend. It's a mega trend. I think we can safely call data centers. I heard you guys kind of, or you perhaps, lamenting that we didn't have any copper to discuss today. Because again, like copper is one of those tentacles coming from this data center megatrend. So I'll be cheeky and throw in a copper pick from you if you still like the thematic.
It's not as easy as it was. OZ Minerals was laid down as there. That was the quality play. Yeah. BHP sorted it up. We're long Samphire. We're long BHP. We're long Evolution. Evolution has been a pain in the neck because earnings do matter, you know, but I still like gold as well. I've got a sneaky one. I think of BHP when it lifts its bid for Anglo American. Hopefully it hasn't done so in the last hour or two, otherwise I'm off mark. And if the stock does spike down towards $40, I think you're getting great entry to that quality stock. Otherwise you have to go overseas, maybe look at ETFs, but copper locally at the moment, Sandfire is the easy play. It almost dances a perfect tango with the copper price, you know.
I don't think you really invest in miners, do you, Rudy?
I don't, but I do have a view about it. If you go for the smaller cap, single commodity ones, then you always risk that if something happens, weather, mine, whatever, cost overrun, share price gets clobbered. You see it in the gold sector, for example. So I would, if I would go into the theme, I would opt for either Rio or BHP, because any problems that appear there, you don't see that much in the share price, and you still get your upside.
All right. Thanks, guys. A little bonus conversation there for you all. Let's get to stock number one on the list. So, I'll do a little bit of a song and dance. That's a double buy for our stock of the day. That will be sent to the investment committee. All right, back to the companies that you've picked. This is for Gabby. Data3. So enterprise software provider, is that how I can sort of describe Data 3?
They are more of a traditional software services provider and reseller, for example, of Microsoft software.
Okay, all right.
And those who follow me or this forum, they will know I'm a big fan of the likes of WiseTech. I'm a big fan of the likes of Technology One, which I think are amongst the highest quality growers in technology sectors that we have. I've always thought that Data 3 was more of a second fiddle, third fiddle in comparison. But if you take a longer term view, then I can only acknowledge, there's the chart, that you would not have done badly if you also had added Data 3 instead of the other two I just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
On that basis, I would have to say I might have to do some extra work on this one. I still prefer the other two, by the way. And if I would be interested in Data 3, I would be waiting for a pullback here, because the share price has performed. It's not looking extremely cheap here. And what recently didn't happen, and that's why you see that spike.
We want to see the yearly chart, if we can get the yearly chart up again, please.
But so what didn't happen recently, and that's why you see the big fall in the share price there, is they did not upgrade their guidance for the year, mm-hmm. and the market was expecting them to do so. So that's essentially a disappointment. And I know from Data 3, they have one particular characteristic, because they are from Brisbane and they work a lot for the Queensland government. The fourth quarter in their year is basically the make or break each financial year. That's this quarter. So I'd be more comfortable buying in the next quarter when I know what happens in this quarter.
So I'm going to call that a hold. If you own it, you wouldn't be selling, but you would like to buy it on a further pullback.
Yes.
What do you think about Data 3 there, Sean?
Something similar to Rudy. It's a less heralded ASX tech stock, but I think for good reason. They describe themselves as the number one reseller, I think, of Microsoft, as Rudy said, but also of Cisco and HP.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're the fifth reseller of Dell products. So they're very active in that sort of space. But it's not cheap. And as Rudy showed out, it's a volatile stock. And around here, I'd call it a cautious buy into pullbacks, because it's not a stock we've owned, because we think there are better tech stocks in the suite out there. And we've, whether it be NextDC, we've already touched on, whether it be WiseTech, whether it be Technology One, which we haven't owned, whether it's been Zero, that's been very good to us. These are stocks that move around. It's a volatile space.
Yeah.
Now, they can move around on earnings, as Rudy said, but they also can move around on interest rate sentiment, which gives you an opportunity to buy a quality stock. Just because the sentiment about something that's going on with the Fed can move the price.
Yeah.
So cautious buy into weakness for us.
Okay, there you go. That's for Gabby. Let's get on to the next stock on our list. I was just trying to pull up some research on G8 Education. So this is coming from RBC Capital Markets, because for Tony, G8 Education is on the list. He says that the AGM, or sorry, I should say that RBC says AGM trading update remains consistent with market expectations for solid growth in calendar year 24. Year-to-date occupancy trends are up on the previous corresponding period. Management highlights included strong cost performance, with agency usage well below that of the PCP. All right, so that's a little bit of a summary of the update that we had coming from G8 Education. Does that turn your view or color your view on G8 at all?
What's the stock done today?
I think it's yeah.
But it's not going to change what I've written down here, but I am interested.
Let me see.
So I think that's about right. So at the end of the day...
Well, that's over the year. So today, G8's share price is up by 1.2%.
So the stock's gone nowhere for 3 years. Mm-hmm. And I don't think you can ignore that, whether you're looking at earnings, whether you're looking at fundamentals. It hasn't gone anywhere for 3 years, so it's been a bad investment. It's been in a rebuilding phase. And the most important thing for this, it's been paying a good dividend. It's been a dividend trap for a lot of people, in my opinion. It is starting to come out the other side. The update today was positive. It's at 1%. That's actually probably underperforming a lot of the market, but it's positive. The occupancy is the key to this stock, is improving. They're pushing up the prices. I think last year was 4.3% the last time they reported. So I think it's a stock that should be, I'd still call it a cautious buy. I think it is getting ready to break out of this 3-year sideways movement. But until the market embraces it, I don't see any reason to buy it. So I don't want to sound like a technical trader. We mix a lot of reasons to buy the stock, but it's gone nowhere for 3 years. Mm-hmm. It's come out with a solid update. It's still not gone anywhere today of any consequence.
Yeah, geez.
It's like lying on the beach.
That's
it's flat
pretty
as a pancake.
Boring chart, isn't it?
It is. So it's, you know, it's, there are better places to be in the market than in that stock at this point in time, but it is becoming more interesting.
Interesting. Okay. And wages, obviously, costs are always a big one for G8 education. And then you've got the budget next week. And I'm not saying that there's anything in terms of childcare in next week's budget, but it is a sector at the mercy
it might,
of policy.
Exactly, it
oh,
might,
absolutely. Exactly, yeah. And that's, you know, you don't want to be playing. We're going into an election year. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to be in the you know, and it's probably a close election. I'm not sure what the bookmakers are saying. It's not quite as prevalent as looking at the American election at the moment. But I think, you know, you are going to see Labour do their best to keep everyone on side and think they're doing the popular thing. And the popular thing will be to keep those costs down.
Maybe they might as well subsidize them. Anyway, who knows? We're talking politics all of a sudden. Yep. I haven't been a big fan. And they've looked cheap for quite a while. By the way, the fact that they don't have performed for 3 years, that doesn't bother me. I mean, I'm still owning CSL and very privately. but they do pay a good dividend, but the post-GFC, not GFC, post-COVID years have basically delivered disappointment after disappointment. I've seen many stockbroker reports coming through and go, oh, they look cheap, it's going to happen now. And another disappointment comes 2 months later or so. So it's a tough business. And when you invest, you shouldn't just look at the yield that's on offer. You also have to look at what the risks and the potential rewards are. And it's better to have stocks, I think, that have a much clearer path forward. Mm-hmm. And I don't think GA education is one of them. Even if you go into REITs, I think there are better REITs out there to own than GA education.
Okay, so if you had it, would you just sell out?
Yes, I would go
for a better for
better REIT, yes. Yeah. An interesting proposition here is that, and I was alerted to that earlier today, shares in Transurban are now offering more than 5.5% yield. That's a large cap stock in Australia, which is a much better, much more solid trajectory than this one is. So if you're looking for yield, and I'm assuming that the share price has come under pressure from Transurban because of bond yields, then I think you're the better proposition there. So I would switch.
Okay, so Transurban is an opportunity. Where are you thinking about, yeah, for yield?
Yes.
In the REITs, which you referenced a couple of times,
yes.
Because you do have those REITs that have exposure to, you know, healthcare,
yeah,
and more stable sort,
yes,
of,
yes.
So the, tenants, I should,
so,
say.
So the REITs from HomeCo, you have the Daily Needs REIT,
yep,
which is the one I own in portfolio and has been one of the outperformers in April, my understanding is. But they also have another one which specifically invests in healthcare assets. And they both, I think, look interesting in that REIT space. If I take an even different view, I would argue that NextDC is a REIT. And the major contributor to the local index is Goodman Group. But uh-huh, you wouldn't buy any of them for the yields.
But yeah,
you would buy both of them.
Okay.
For the upside.
For the capital gains.
Yeah.
I know you guys were pretty positive on REITs coming into 2024, higher for longer. Does that dent your view at all?
I just think they've come back with bond yields.
Yeah. Yep.
As Rudy said before, we still believe all that's really happened is the can has been kicked down the road. Interest rates will come down in 2024, 2025, and the right REIT will perform strongly.
Yeah.
Okay.
My favorite saying is the share market will do the right thing eventually, after it first has tried out all other options.
Yeah, I mean, one of my favorite phrases this year is the market's going to go up. I'm sure I've said it to you and Dean more than once, in a kind of three steps forward, two steps back nature at the moment, because it's just swinging with optimism about rate cuts. Yes, no, yes, no. We've had that a couple of times already this year. If you're not stocks you want to buy and at what levels you think they're good value, it's a great investing environment. If you get caught up in the emotion, it's probably horrible.
Yeah. I'm just going to sit back and let you guys just talk amongst yourselves. I'll learn so much, and I think our viewers will as well. Okay, love old adages. Okay, let's get to Alice's stock pick, though, and that is Ingham's chicken. Winner chicken dinner?
The boulevard of broken dreams and delayed promises. Ingham's is almost a similar story as GA education. The number of times I see people making forecasts that they are finally going to have a fantastic period ahead, and then it doesn't last that long usually. It really doesn't. Well, I mean, today, of course, you see that's it, but it usually doesn't last that long. I mean, and In the simple summary, in theory, there should not be a difference between theory and practice, but in practice there is. And the fact is that if you're the number one producer, supplier of chooks to the supermarkets and to the rest of Australia, that you should, all being equal, you should do very, very well. But unfortunately, it's not the same as being REA or one of the other market leaders we have. In chook countries, it doesn't work like that. So it's either the feed that disappoints or something else. There's always a disappointment somewhere.
Well, and his most recent profit result was pretty good.
Well, again, temporarily, yes. Consistently and over longer time, no. I mean, there's always a disappointment lurking somewhere. And I rather go to the supermarket and buy a nice chook for $20 than I buy them on the share market.
Yeah, right.
I bought an organic chook this weekend. It cost me $31.
I was going to say, yeah. You must be doing well.
It was my birthday. So yeah, I thought, I'm going to cook one of these chooks that tastes a bit better in theory.
Oh, good. Well, what do you think?
I've got to be a little bit more positive than Rudy, but there are moving parts here, and they're not all being controlled. I mean, the price of feed being a big one, you know, and labour, of course, etc. Mm-hmm. So this has been a company. At the last result, you said it was good, but the stock dropped 20%. Yeah. I'd hate to think what would happen to a stock you don't like the result.
Yeah.
You know, because their outlook wasn't so good.
Yeah.
And we are in a market, and I mentioned this to Rudy out the front, where a lot of boards are liking to under-promise, hoping to over-deliver. Mm-hmm. This is a bit more involved here. That might not be the case, but I think it's returned to a place where I'd see little downside to where it is now. So we think it's interesting, but I stress we haven't bought it. It's trading cheaper than its average over the last 5 years. But again, as Rudy says, it has been a bit of a serial disappointer, even though it's up a lot over the last 12 months, as you showed. So we haven't pressed the button to buy it. We have been watching it. The trouble is, every time we look about maybe buying it, something's better value.
Yeah.
Something's more attractive.
Yeah. You know, it is a relative game.
Yeah, in our active growth portfolio, we own 20 stocks. Mm-hmm. Is that in the top 10% of the ASX 200? Not yet.
Yeah, okay. So that's I'd say a hold if you're in it.
Yes.
And I'm going to say a sell for you. Yeah, no need
look
to
elsewhere.
Be in.
Look
okay,
elsewhere.
Good. Let's get back to tech. And also sort of foreshadowing, I suppose, what we will be hearing from the company coming this week after a pretty strong report last time, you know, Life360 is it for Rex. And it's got this new advertising model that it's rolling out. It's pushing into, you know, tiered subscription model here in Australia. So is this a tech company that is proving its worth, not yet profitable, but pulling all the levers?
I'm looking for a trumpet somewhere, because I was asked early in the year by David Koch about my top three stocks in technology for the year, and this was one of them.
Okay.
And where's my trumpet? So obviously,
well, we'll get a bell in here or something for you next time, Rudy.
It has done well. I must say, I still think you can buy it, by the way. Yes. High multiples, yes, you get increased volatility, but you just... That's sometimes the price you pay for higher returns.
So I know you like paying up for quality. What is it, in your view, that is very quality about Life360?
Well, I was about to explain that.
You've been told off.
When you look at the business model, and I remember when they came to, because they actually are a US company, and they're listed in Australia, and they have this business model where you would think, instinctively, you go like, do these guys really stand a chance against the likes of Apple and etc.? And there's other competitors in the market, but they've done a remarkable good job in building that business and getting it. It's getting there towards profitability. And now, of course, they're going for other regions and for more growth out of their database. And if anything, I think what that means is that if you look at companies from the outside, I think sometimes you just have to accept that even if it doesn't look that great at face value, the execution of what they've done is absolutely admirable. And I mean, you cannot fault it. And it has done really, really well. And on the current setup, it would appear that they have still a lot of growth under their wings. So unless at some point they stumble or something happens that really disturbs their model, there should be many years still of continued growth. Then the question becomes, at what point do you get on board if you're not there yet, right? So my view is, and that's the same as with Technology One, with WiseTech, and with some of the other ones, just wait for a pullback, and the pullback always comes, right? Just wait a little bit long enough. And in those pullbacks, I mean, you just have to, it's a little bit of an acquired taste. How large is a large pullback large enough? Well, that depends on your personal. And if you use technical analysis, use that. I don't necessarily use it. I just watch the pullbacks.
So today, for example, and that's the okay. name of this game. Very congrats. It's up by 4.25%.
Yeah, so I would wait for the pullback.
Oh, so.
But okay. if it pulls back and you think it's deeply enough, just buy it.
Okay.
And maybe try out their product. I mean, they're also watching dogs these days and other pets.
Yeah, and they're going to get into, you know, elderly care. Mm-hmm. There is, you know, roadside assist triggers, all the rest of it. It's pretty yeah. interesting. What do you think about Life360?
I think it's a fascinating company. I think a lot of people wouldn't even know what it does. So it does tracking apps.
Yeah.
I don't use it. And no. we pay for a lot in tracking apps in our family. So my wife's got a business which has got 5 utes. We've got tracking apps in all okay. those utes. So we know where they are and if the guys mm-hmm. are doing their jobs mm-hmm. properly. I track my wife. Just happens to be on the same one, but we track our
she
son.
She probably tracks you too.
I'm
just
sure
saying.
She does. But more importantly, I track my son as well. Yeah. I want to know where he is and what he's doing. And you know he's going to have his phone with him, so you know where he is. So it does tracking apps. The dynamics of this business, it's San Francisco based, as Rudy said, the heart of the world's technology area. It's got 66 million people, last time I read, using its apps. Only 96,000, 100,000 people basically are paying at the moment. Mm. So the leverage it can pull, the levers it can pull to turn that up are huge. Obviously now it's also doing advertising, as you mentioned before. It is interesting. I mentioned a price, I'd love it around $12, but then again, who wouldn't? You know, I'm a believer, and we do this a lot in our miners, which I know Rudy doesn't like, but stuff like stocks, I should say, not stuff, stocks like Samphire, you know, we'll scale in and scale out. You know, even though we might be very bullish copper and very bullish, Samphire, if we think it's going to pop above $10 and copper's going to pop to $5, we might take 1% off of our holding off, as in which would be 10% of our holdings. Mm-hmm. So I think we might scale in, scale out. Same thing with stocks like this. If it starts pulling back $1, another $1, another $1, you don't pick the bottom. You only pick your bottom when you're asleep in your dreams. You know, pick levels where you start to think you can put money to work. And if you put money to work in an area where you want it to go lower, then it's ideal. If you put all in at one level and it drops another 10%, it's not good dynamics. You want to be investing to sleep. Mm-hmm. Another one of my favorite phrases.
Yeah, okay.
So that's how I would play the stock. It's a fascinating stock. I am concerned, which Rudy, I think, has just pushed to one side a bit, about the competition like Apple. You know, these stocks are starting to find growth a bit harder. This isn't necessarily where they're going to find growth. It's going to affect a balance sheet of what, $2.6 trillion company isn't going to come from something like this. But, you know, I can see this stock at the moment looks great. It looks really, really interesting. Buy into pullbacks. I wouldn't chase it into strength, though.
Got it. So I'm just going to put that on hold for both of you guys with the caveat that you want to buy it cheaper. You can likely get it cheaper on a day that, you know, the market just falls out of bed or something like that. Or wakes up on the wrong side of the bed, I should say. Fifth stock of the day, Telix Pharmaceuticals. And this has been picked by Mark. Telix, what do you think, Sean?
I was hoping I'd go second on this one because I know very little about it. It's got it's not a stock we've ever bought at Market Matters. We're not big on biotechs. They tend to have
But this one's actually selling stuff.
It is. It's got one product. But they tend to be very binary outcomes.
Yeah.
And a bit like Rudy was alluding to before with miners and copper, go for a company that's making a profit, paying a dividend like BHP, and you're not going to go out the back door if someone does something really, really bad, like some of the junior miners. Biotechs are like junior miners in the way they tend to result. And that makes it very hard to have them in a portfolio. It's got one product. It's got a second one coming through. It looks fairly good value here. I know a lot of the analysts like it. Mm. I don't know enough about it to put any more than a hold on the stock. But if I looked at it technically, I'd say it's a bit stretched, buy it into a pullback.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I'm going to echo some of those comments because that's exactly the reason why I always preach to be careful with biotechs. I think it's probably the same as with this is not a microcap at the moment anymore because its share price has gone up a lot. But with those microcap stocks in general, including biotechs, unless you know something very specific about them, you have to be careful because it often the outcome is quite binary. In this case, I know that a lot of analysts like this one. It has a product that has done well so far. However, there are trials coming up this year, and you never know the outcome of the trials. And I forgot which one of the analysts pointed this out recently, but they said if it ends up a negative outcome, the share price can, I mean, there's no bottom there, I mean, essentially. So it can fall a lot. Mm-hmm. I mean, and that is I'm a little bit with Sean here. That's normally the risk that I do not wish in my portfolio. I like to sleep.
Yeah.
As okay. I said.
Yeah.
I mean, look at CSL, world-class business. And still they had a result that came out negative because it's such a big company with different growth prospects elsewhere. But suddenly people said, oh, where's CSL's growth going to come from? Mm-hmm. And it fell. Yeah. I think best part of 10%.
Yeah, yeah, so one trick pony. So would you take some profits if you've got them in this company? Would you
out of risk management, yes.
Okay.
I mean, a lot of people, the problem is investors always say, I have a long-term view. But the long-term view changes very quickly if it goes down by 30, 40, 50%.
All right. Look, we are at the halfway mark. That was Telix Pharmaceuticals. Let me just summarize what we've learned so far. We got off to a really strong start with a double buy for AGL. Sean says he likes it bullish, medium, long term, and also likes the income it provides. Rudy points to that mega trend of data centers in a note from Morgan Stanley out earlier this week. If you're an FN Arena subscriber, you get a lot of this information. There's your plug, Rudy. You're welcome.
I get mine later, do I?
Yeah, it matters. I'll get yours later.
The story tomorrow on the website, by the way.
Good. Okay. So Data 3. Sean says that it's not cheap. It's a cautious buy into pullbacks, but he does prefer NextDC and WiseTech. My mate beside me here, Rudy, also prefers NextDC and WiseTech and Technology One, if anybody recalls. So he's always considered this one a second fiddle, but he would just hold it. So for G8 Education, Rudy would sell it. For yield, he'd prefer Transurban. Also look towards some of those daily needs REITs from HomeCo. He would be selling this one. It's a cautious buy for Sean because he says it looks as if something's about to happen, ready to break out, but it's gone nowhere for 3 years and it's not in the Market Matters portfolio, just so you're clear. And you can also subscribe to the Market Matters website. Ingham's, it's a hold, many moving parts, but little downside, Sean points out. But Rudy says sell it. Boulevard of broken dreams and delayed promises. Life360, they both really like this company, but when we adhere to the rules for this program, a buy or hold or a sell today, they would both wait for a pullback to get into this one. And Telix, you just heard what they said. It's a sell and a hold for my guests. All right, we have the new investment committee episode being posted to our website and going out after the market close on the stream today. So, Camplify out, Woolworths in, Soul Patts and Macquarie trimmed, BHP increased by 2%. That was going into April. And let me tell you, the team made some pretty punchy changes to the portfolio last time around. I had the pleasure of hosting it with Nathan, with Henry, with Ben. And so you'll have to tune in, ausbiz.com.au, to look at that most recent episode of the Investment Committee if you're a listener to this in podcast form. Don't forget as well, you can hear commentary from guys like Rudy, from Sean, from any other of our illustrious expert guests just by going to ausbiz.com.au, and you can catch up with all of the content that you may miss throughout the day on the live stream. Also, keep your requests coming in, please. It makes it much easier for me to design this program when we get the companies that you guys would like to hear about on a regular basis. And keep in mind that some of the really, really small ones, we've just got to wait until we've got an appropriate host to comment on it, just to make sure that we're getting the best analysis possible for you. All right. With that in mind, Sean was talking about retailers earlier. We'll be talking about Premier Investments, Sigma Healthcare, Vicinity Centers, Webjet, which came up with a guest I spoke with yesterday, and Boss Energy also came up on this program yesterday. So it's nice as well to hear views from, you know, different expert guests on some of the same stocks as well, because inevitably, you know, some of the same ones come up. Okay, let's go to Premier Investments. That's been picked by Tim. I'm going to start with you on this one, Sean. Is it a retailer that has, I guess, potential upside, or, you know, are you looking for some of the more beaten down retailers to add to the portfolio?
Okay, one step at a time. Yes, we do think it's got more upside. We think, it's had a 14% pullback last time I checked.
Yeah.
As has a lot of the consumer discretionary stocks with the bond yield move that we've touched on a few times. Is it the one we'd pick to buy? No, it's not. Mm-hmm. It has got some corporate activity coming through. Its latest result was a solid one. I think they're going to spin off...
Spiegel's and Peter Alexander.
Exactly. They're going to spin off. They're doing some corporate activity around the edges. Solomon Lew's a very smart gent. So I think it is a solid company. I prefer JB Hi-Fi into this current pullback. We prefer SUL for yield. But the whole sector, I feel, is going to get interesting. Obviously, there's going to be some giveaways. Some people are going to have a bit more money in their pocket in the very near future. I don't think that's relevant. I think these pick the company that you think is the strongest in the sector. And in my opinion, that's probably JB Hi-Fi. That's had a pullback for yield, SUL.
I'm so used to hearing Lovisa. What do you think of Lovisa?
It's just a volatile play. It's a great company. It's really, really good. I just think it's probably towards the fully priced up here. But if I was a trader, it's where I'd be looking.
Yeah, okay.
But I'm not. I'm an investor.
You're an investor as well. Premier?
I was following the conversation on Lovisa. So that's why my mind wandered off.
Well, you can start there if you like, Rudy. Don't ever let me tell you what to do. Okay. That you would.
I've never shopped at Lovisa, but I walk in sometimes and I think it's cheap bling, but they do it very, very well.
They do it well. I have two little girls and they adore Lovisa.
Yes, I know, exactly. So I guess the comment made by Sean is it's very volatile. I think people have to, and I have come to understand this over the years as well. If you buy great companies, they trade on higher valuations because they're doing well, essentially. And at times that by definition becomes more volatile because the PE is high, right? That doesn't mean that that your future returns will not be okay. And as long as Lovisa can continue their rollout of shops, they should do well, all else being equal. I think if you look into the discretionary sector in Australia, I think everyone is sort of on the same level here. Nick Scali, Premier Investments, JB Hi-Fi, Lovisa, maybe you add Accent Group, and I think we probably sort of all the good ones now. Maybe Super Retail, but there's a little bit of in-house rumblings going on there at the moment. Mm-hmm. And all the rest essentially are playing second fiddle. Right? So Premier Investments, last time I was here, that was actually at the top of that price spike. And we both guests, I forgot with whom I was, we both said like, maybe not here.
Yeah.
Now the share price is lower, maybe now you can, because you have a dividend, you probably get more upside here. I still think the outlook for discretionary retailers is a little bit muddied, I think. I'm not quite sure. I mean, anecdotal evidence tells me that in particular the smaller cap retailers, and they may not necessarily be listed, but they're doing it tough. I mean, my neighborhood is on the verge of a crisis. But that doesn't necessarily always translate into listed companies. I'm a little bit more cautious, but I do think you can probably give, if you do give one of the discretionary retailers benefit of the doubt.
I'm calling it a buy.
This could be one of them.
There you go. It's a buy, it's a hold. You'll have to do your own research. That's a good segue. Do your own research. This is not financial advice.
That is true.
This is information only, as we say. Now, let's get to the next on the list, and that's Sigma Healthcare. And this has been picked by Mike. I don't feel like I've spoken about Sigma Healthcare in quite some time. Rudy, is there a reason for that?
Yeah, there's a reverse takeover happening with their major shareholder and major customer. Chemist Warehouse. And now we all know why EBOS lost the contract.
Yeah.
I'm going to be maybe a little bit controversial here. I think you should buy EBOS and forget about Sigma for a time.
Well, you're the second person in as many days that has told
really?
Me that. Yeah, well, the conversation was not about Sigma, to be honest, but it was EBOS being good value. And I said, but they've lost their Chemist Warehouse contract, obviously.
Yeah, but
and they said, arguably.
Company. They're the better company. And losing one contract doesn't. Mean that they can't have any growth anymore for the next 5, 7, 10 years. I think what happens in Sigma is it was never a high quality company. It had to sell its soul to the devil to get this contract from Chemist Warehouse. Chemist Warehouse is going to milk this, and everyone has a very good impression, very good image about Chemist Warehouse. I mean, I walk sometimes in, and they have a lot of products and I mean my Armani aftershave is discounted, so they're probably going to do well, but that's priced in, I mean, and that I think is the problem here, that everyone is, I mean, the anticipation is often stronger than reality, and I think we're anticipating a lot here.
Okay, anything we need to talk about when it comes to Sigma Health in your view?
I don't think it's quite a lower quality company as Rudy says, but I certainly couldn't buy it here.
Yeah.
You know, stocks come back to around $1.20, which is quite a big percentage pullback in a rising market. Yeah. It might be more interesting, but we couldn't buy it here, so I'd call it a hold.
Got it. Thank you. All right. No need to dwell on Sigma or Chemist Warehouse, whatever we're going to be calling it in the vernacular. 6, 7, 8. Yeah, we are already on number 8. And this is Vicinity Centers. This has been picked by Sarah. Interesting, because, yes, consumers slow down. But, you know, these are more regional shopping centers. And, you know, they have Woolies. They've got Coles. You know, they've got a lot of those sort of... You know, what do you call them? Cornerstones.
I'll tell you what they do have. They do have a low valuation because bond yields are high, and I think that is that will always. I think at this point in the cycle, probably why Sean was positive about REITs early in the year. I made this comment already last year because last year the valuation was actually a lot lower than this year. If you have a view that no matter what the RBA does later today or what the Fed is going to do next month or so, but bond yields will be lower at some point. If it's not later this year, it will be next year. Then those share prices are too low, purely on the translation of bond yields into share prices. Now, the next step you do is, do you then want to have exposure to shopping centers or not? These guys did a market update recently. That was not bad at all. They do pay a decent dividend, and the share price is undervalued.
Yeah, and do they have inflation-linked leases as well?
Well, that's how it works.
Yeah.
Well, how it works is they get a cut of what retailers sell in their centers. That's sort of how that works, and they are regional. They're not quite the same as Center Group.
But if you're saying, as you did before, that some areas are doing it tough, that cut is going to go down.
Yes, yes.
And
that's the reason why maybe you don't get too enthusiastic, but maybe then the low share price takes care of that.
I think we've also got a slowing leasing market. So retail might remain strong. It's stronger than we thought it would be 6 months ago.
Yeah.
You know, we've got that wrong. So we don't own a retail stock in the active growth portfolio at the moment. And in hindsight, looking back at the performance, we should have done. But I think that the leasing market is slowing down. So what's happening is you're getting the quality floating to the top, as so often happens. Earnings count, as Rudy said earlier. But the companies that aren't that good are struggling, and you're seeing those drop off. Depends where you are, how many shops aren't open or aren't working anymore. So I would have it just here right now as a hold, I think. But into dips, it is getting cheap.
Okay.
I've actually written down here, interesting, around $1.80. So I'd call it a hold here, probably, because it's not that far.
No.
What are you? So that was a hold for you?
Yeah.
Yield is also in your mind. So yes. Citi is a neutral, Morgan Stanley underweight, Ordman at hold, UBS a sell, Macquarie a neutral.
It's a bit boring for everyone, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right.
But we discussed a few REITs earlier, and I think they are better value, and they equally offer you a high yield, and et cetera.
So number 9 on the list, and this is another company that came up yesterday in conversation with a small cap investor, actually. You can find that up online. I'll get you the name in just a moment of what it's called online. But Webjet has been picked by AJ. And Sean, what my guest was saying was, you know, for them, for him, what's most interesting about Webjet isn't, you know, the flight booking. It's the beds business in Europe primarily. You know, what do you think of the whole travel narrative? You know, keeping in mind that these companies, as we well know, have been through a pretty tough time in COVID and issued a lot of shares, correct, Webjet?
A lot of shares. I love traveling, so I'm a bit biased. I love a good holiday. You're dead right. I think that you've got to look outside of the online booking of flights, what the value, the locked-in value for Webjet is. So the business-to-business beds is the growth area. I think the market might be underestimating how good they can do that. They're also doing quite well with their AI side of things to getting people to go through their sites and to spend more money. There's a lot of improvements or happening there in that regard. So I would have Webjet as a buy. It's the standout performer in the travel sector, without a shadow of doubt. It's really, really done very well. It's had a bit of a pullback here. Anything around this $8 mark, I think, is starting to offer some good value.
Okay. And so when you think of companies in the travel sector, is that sort of a medium-term view?
Yes. I mean, we bought corporate travel not long after it got hammered. And that's, we thought there was value there, but it's not. The people aren't convinced. Again, it's we love an upgrade, not a downgrade, but we felt it went into a big value area after that sell-off. But the market is going to have to wait. That's why we were patient where we entered. The market has to wait to see the turnaround before they believe the turnaround. So that stock has gone nowhere since the downgrade. Flight Centre, is still a stock, even though I booked my latest holiday through Flight Centre, I still struggle to see how that, in the bigger picture, will do as well as Webjet from a value perspective point of view. So I like Webjet still. It's a good stock.
Okay, Webjet, we've got a buy here. Rudy?
I only have one question. Are you trying to be my best friend?
Absolutely. I've only seen you once this year.
We've got a little love happening here.
It's the only time I've seen you all year, Rudy. Yeah.
Where's my trumpet again?
Oh, really? Oh, this is another Rudy call.
This was another one I nominated, yes. Very brief. Years ago, Webjet was one of those companies that people didn't really get their head around. They thought, like, it's a bit strange. It did well on the share market, but people didn't really see how that business model would work. And I must admit, I was one of them. I would go to the Webjet website, I'd find the cheapest flight, and I would go to a flight center and then book it. And a lot of people did that, kind of stuff. If you come to today, that business has completely transformed itself. And I've been saying this a couple of times now on this program as well. This is the best stock in that sector. I mean, and in particular, after the likes of corporate travel, let's just say their messaging to the market hasn't been ideal over the times, and that basically detracts from the quality that could potentially be on offer. Mm. And from that perspective, a transformed business doing very well. I don't think it's gonna issue a profit warning like Hello World had to do, or basically not an upgrade, but Hello World. And again, this is on a longer term outlook. I think this still looks a great value. Yeah. I guess we have to send it
so to still the, looks to good
the,
value.
I think we have to send it to the committee.
Where's the bell? This is where we need the bell for. Yeah. To the investment committee. All right. Yeah, exciting times. We'll just have to wait another month to find out what they say. But that's okay. Yeah. We've got the new edition being put online today. And we'll live stream after the close, the COB today. So that is a buy, an undervalued story and company at this time. All right. That's number 9 on the list. Let's get to number 8. And this came up on the call yesterday as a preferred pick because it was Deep Yellow that was actually nominated by one of our viewers. Yeah. And so, you know, we were talking about the uranium thematic and, yeah, saying that my guest was saying, it's Philip Pepe from Shawn Partners, that, you know, in that space, Paladin and Boss Energy would be the preferred picks. But what do you guys think of uranium as an energy thematic? You know, we're going nuclear, so to speak, clean and green, hopefully, not here, but around the world, and that there is, you know, that this actually has legs, this narrative.
Yeah, the world's going nuclear.
Yeah.
Australia's definitely not. We're just probably going to mine it.
We don't mind mining it and sending it overseas,
we've done a lot
precious
of,
about it here.
Something a bit like what we do with iron ore, isn't it? We don't add a lot of value to things around the edges. But on a more serious note, we're very bullish uranium. We prefer Market Matters Paladin to Boss Energy. But we've been in Paladin twice in the last year. It's a volatile space where 30% pullbacks are a bit like a cappuccino. They happen all the time. And right here, right now, it's got a good tailwind in it, and I wouldn't be chasing at these levels. Right here, I'd be calling it a hold. But it's like the market. At the moment, we're bullish the market. We believe interest rates are going lower, bond yields are going lower. So we believe, as I said before, 3 steps forward, 2 steps back. I'm more comfortable buying dips than I am selling strength. And I think in the uranium space, you will get those dips. Buy it when it feels uncomfortable. I was too fussy in the last 2 weeks. I thought we'd get them a bit lower and was wrong.
Yeah, okay, because you do get this news flow around uranium. You know, you get the spot buying, which sends the spot price up, or there was news last week that, look at that 5-year gain. News last week that there was a, a Canadian hedge fund that was buying up, you know, a portion of some listed company here in Australia. So, yeah, it is one of those ones you can sort of tell when I go on my X or my Twitter feed in the morning what type of a day we're going to have for uranium stocks, because my feed will just be full of people, you know, commenting.
Look at that last pullback. It was 28%.
Yeah, wow.
You know, if you bought at the wrong time and you were a twitchy active trader as opposed to a long-term investor, you probably would have got out just when you should have been buying.
Yeah.
By the way, did I understand you correctly? Do cappuccinos happen all the time?
I drink a lot of coffee. I drink a lot of coffee.
Love a cappuccino right now.
Anyway, if anyone's interested, in the last bull cycle, uranium peaked at $138 per pound. It's nowhere near there. Other stocks, popular ones mentioned, are Lotus and Deep Yellow. There's another one that just escaped my mind. But because I try, even though I don't invest in these stocks, I always try to keep pace with which ones are the better quality ones, and that pays off.
Alligator is another one, isn't there?
That's often mentioned as well. Yes. Small correction on Sean. I wouldn't make firm statements like the world is going nuclear, because I was there in 2007, and it looked like it was the case. And then, of course, then we get an accident in Japan, and uranium is out for the next decade. That's the problem. The volatility on a day-to-day basis, and the fact that commodities are always incredibly difficult to predict.
Well, they're cyclical.
Further out.
Well, I know.
It looks at this point in time.
We are pushing down. This is different. Yes. When you're going to get buried in the market.
Yes.
But that situation that we had in Fukushima, that was an old plant, well and truly past its use-by date. It's a bit like me.
That doesn't matter. So, if you get an accident tomorrow
but
in Belgium,
I think that global warming, sort of start to trump some of these one-off accidents.
The Chinese are building them big time. The Japanese have started building them again. The Germans are keen.
Canadians never stop building them.
So I think that...
Belgium.
Yeah.
And France.
Yeah. Is that why you're here?
But I'm far away from the nuclear
reactor. But at the end of the day, I'll stick by my statement. We're going nuclear.
Yeah, yeah. Listen, I'm just saying it's obvious to make that statement, but I'm saying just you can never make it with 100% certainty, because things in particular in commodities, they change.
Yeah. Yep.
And also the nuclear technology itself is changing. There are alternatives coming in the background as well. And they might be ready in 10 years' time. Yeah. So. But anyway, for the time being, and this is the problem with commodity investing. I mean, it's nice to have a long-term view, but share prices are incredibly volatile in the short term. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm a little bit with Sean. Like, at what point you either get in and you just close your eyes and you just take the view that over 5, 7, 10 years, that share price will be a lot higher, assuming they execute correctly.
Yeah, because there's always execution risk in miners.
And it's exactly, they have only one mine. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of water can spoil it. We've seen it happening with ERA, remember? Yep.
Yep. Yes.
Before you know it, people lost money in the uranium boom.
A lot of money.
In the uranium boom, yeah?
Yes.
So it does happen. And otherwise, if you can't do that, then you have to have Sean's strategy of trying to play and use the volatility to your own benefit.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'd clarify, we only have been in and out of Paladin twice in the last 12 months, only with 3% of our active growth portfolio. So a small amount think there's a good risk reward here. Yeah. We'll try and add a bit of alpha to the portfolio to make ourselves stand out. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's not, I wouldn't call it quite trading, but it's bordering on the trading. You know, when you think a thematic you want to be long gives you an opportunity, you take advantage of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Another fact to throw in. In the previous boom, Paladin Resources, at the time they were called Paladin Resources, didn't produce anything, and the share price got to $10.
Yeah.
Look at where that is today.
All right. Let history be your cautionary guide, I suppose. Now, so that was would you hold, boss, if you were in it?
If you can stomach the volatility, you can hold this one for 5, 6, 7, 10 years, I would say, because it looks like Sean's firm statement at this point in time is correct.
Yeah.
We are moving into uranium. But if you can't stomach that, you have to be a little bit smarter than more strategies like Sean.
Yeah, weren't going to say smarter than Sean. No, you use smart strategies like Sean.
I think the key is position size.
Yeah.
I think that's really important.
Yes. Yeah.
It's going to be a volatile ride
in
either direction. So you shouldn't have the house on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
An investor should be warned, because look at what happened to coal and to lithium. Rare earths.
Perfectly put. Right? Perfectly. Lithium is a great example.
Yeah.
See, well, that's also interesting now as well.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it's interesting. Yeah. Lithium's interesting now. So you think it's bottomed on the way up?
Yes.
Are you invested in any lithium companies you'd like to share?
We've got a relatively small holding in Pilbara. And we still hold Mineral Resources, which is starting to move nicely.
Mm. Yeah. All right. Thanks there. I just squeezed one last piece of information out of my guests for you for this hour. There's lots to think about, lots of food for thought, you know, thoughts on strategy, thoughts on how you need to approach investing or how you could consider approaching investing. So let me just run you through what we learned in this past half hour. So Premier, it's a buy for Rudy. I'll start with that positivity. But, you know, they both list the Nick Scalies, the JB Hi-Fives, Lovisa's as solid companies. It's a hold for Sean. He would actually prefer JB Hi-Fi or Super Retail for yield. I guess he's looking past some of the negative headlines about some of the workplace goings on there.
Got to look forward.
Yeah, Sigma, it's... Yeah, it's a hold, I guess, for both of my guests. Of course, this is now backdoor listing for Chemist Warehouse. Rudy has flagged eBOS as a company you might prefer in that space. Vicinity Centers, it's a hold for Rudy because you get the yield. It's a hold for Sean, but he said you could actually buy this one on dips. And as terms of Webjet, both of my guests like this one. This is another double buy. So two from this program with these experienced market participants. And I was going to say old, but I thought I might get in trouble. But wisdom is often hard-earned. And then the last on the list is Boss Energy. Look, it's a hold for both of my guests. Rudy says long-term hold. You heard what he just said. Paladin, though, I will add, is the preferred pick in that space for the team at Market Matters. And on lithium, Pilbara and Mineral Resources is where they've got their money now. That was good.
Yeah.
I'm glad we brought you two together for the first time in a long time.
First time ever
on the show.
On this program.
Yes,
oh,
together.
Great. Really good. Well, you seem to have a good dynamic. I think that's not too weird to say.
You should date.
Yeah.
Two old timers, quote unquote.
No kidding. All right, guys, let's wrap it up. Thank you, Sean Hickman, Market Matters, and Rudy Philippek Van Dyk from FN Arena, both of whom. Of whom you can subscribe to their emails, or which you can subscribe to their emails. I should probably wrap it up now. Send us your call picks, ausbiz.co/call picks.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.